CBSI in the World. I'm John Batchelor with Victor Davis Hanson of the Hoover Institution, a member of the faculty of Hillsdale College, and writing about who owns American higher education. I do not look to the students to own it because they are, as Victor says, passing through. I don't look to the administrators because these days I don't really understand administration. When I was in the ancient mid-20th century, the administration meant money, tuition, supervision in loco parentis. But today the administration has many more roles. I look to the faculty. Faculties are high morale or low morale. Faculties are a function of the best of scholarship and then working together. And Victor, at Stanford Law School, the faculty is not speaking out. You mentioned the Dean Martinez speaking out, writing eloquently. But at the same time, we learned that the students, all students who participated in the harassing of a federal judge and then what was called a silent mass protest against the Dean Martinez, the remedy by the Stanford Law School, these are grown-ups, these are people in their 20s, is to go to a half-day lecture or lesson on the First Amendment. That is not adult conduct, Victor. That is treating these students as if they're in, what, even high school, even grammar school. Where is the faculty on this? Where are the esteemed voices who've spent their lives with an understanding that transparency is everything when it comes to education?
Well, I think the law school is in crisis. It's a moral, ethical crisis. Remember, the dean is essentially saying that people who got into Stanford Law School and have taken courses there have no knowledge of the First Amendment, and so they need a remedial tutorials if they were eighth graders. And then she's suggesting that all of them need to do it, even though a sizable, maybe minority, but a sizable minority did not disrupt and would not disrupt. So they're punishing, if that's what she thinks it is, the people who were innocent and guilty, because she's afraid to concentrate and focus on the disruptors because she knows what will happen. But you ask about the faculty, but Stanford Law School is in free for all, John. I mentioned before that we had one Stanford law professor who, at the impeachment hearing of President Trump, attacked his son, Barron Trump, 13 years old. We had another who, in social media, said that she wanted Johnny Depp during his divorce trial to be killed and his body eaten by rats. We had two professors at the law school. Remember, they were the parents of Sam Bankman-Fried, and they were involved in suspicious real estate dealings and participated, so the New York Times alleged, in many of his activities that are now under investigation. So, and we had a Stanford law student just 2 years ago with complete impunity that put out a false poster that the Federalist Society was going to conduct an insurrection. So they've got a lot of problems there. And again, there's a theme, a narrative that's characteristic of all this, all these incidents. And that is, if you are a vocal and absolute member of the left and you break protocols or traditions or the law itself, then you're going to be exempt. And the idea is that your noble means have allowed you to embrace certain means that are maybe unfortunate, but they were going to be contextualized and excused. And that's what's happened with the disruptors. If they had taken every single disruptor that they knew and could identify, and they had expelled them from Stanford Law School, I don't think they'd ever have an incident again, John.
I mentioned Robert George, the McCormick professor at Princeton University. And his analysis has been very helpful for me to understand these events from the outside. And Robert George tweets in these last hours, "The creation and maintenance of ideological echo chambers is toxic to academic life. People soaked in ideology and unaccustomed to hearing criticism of their most cherished convictions fail to grasp the value of freedom of thought and speech to truth-seeking." Do you concur with this, Victor? That what's
happening? Yeah, I do. I mean, historically, when you have an ideological litmus test and you don't have a meritocracy, then the entire society breaks down. We saw that in the old Soviet Union with the commissariat. We saw it in Mao's China. And what's happening in these universities, ideology is substituting for both merit and actual achievement. And you notice that this law school was once rated the second in the country. And it bragged that 96 to 97% of its students passed the California bar, as you would one expect on the first try. In the latest bar last summer, 14% of that law school graduating class flunked the California bar, and schools like UC Irvine had a much higher rate. So something is very wrong at Stanford University in particular, but in general, your points on the university and Robert George's points are valid, that we're seeing ideology substitute for merit and achievement. And that's very dangerous. It has no record of success historically when that happens.
I want to be optimistic. A remedy, logical remedy, is to make the faculty more diverse with regard to beliefs and histories and backgrounds and political thinking. That if you don't have an echo chamber, you're less likely to either ignore or cooperate with brutality, or in this case, censorship.
Yeah, I agree. But Stanford has some 70 professors, Sean, and it only has one transparent conservative, a former Justice Mike McConnell. He's the only one out of 70. So somebody did that. It wasn't just an accident. That is, the faculty hiring committees and the dean who approves those and the provost who signs off on the contracts knew what they were doing, and they did it deliberately. In many universities, you have to, as a part of admission to the university, if you're a student, but especially if you're a faculty member, you have to declare a diversity, equity, inclusion statement. It's almost like the loyalty oaths of the 1950s. And you have to prove what you have done to advance these ideological goals. And that is one of the ways that they weed out conservatives. They can use that oath, so to speak, if I could use that term, to make sure that nobody with an undesirable view will be in the faculty community. And then when you have an echo chamber, you get what you saw at Stanford. Again, in a very basic level, we're talking about deterrence. Deterrence makes the world go around. When somebody commits an act that's antisocial or it's criminal and they feel there's no consequences, then they're going to do it again at an accelerated and enhanced rate.
And the remedy, hiring faculty that don't agree with this, you know, that the sun comes up in the east, you know, that the dissent from that obvious fact, that would be a remedy at Stanford Law. Do you hear? We just have about a minute. Do you hear them discussing this at Stanford?
No. They're not going to discuss that. I don't want to be, you know, too maudlin. But again, would they, if they took the three or four students who were the most vocal, who yelled at Justice Duncan that he was scum or that he wished his daughters were raped, And they expel them to, as the French say, to encourage the others, then I think it would have an effect. But they're afraid to do that, John. And it's part of the larger attitude that the universities are not disinterested anymore. They're considered tools of ideological indoctrination for national purposes to change the way we Americans think about things. And the university feels that they're at the vanguard and they're not going to open up their ranks to people who disagree with them. They're hardcore Jacobins. That's just the way it is.
At the Potomac Watch podcast at the Wall Street Journal yesterday, Kim Strassel and her colleagues were commenting on this Stanford Law School imbroglio. And one observation, a warning, was that these students and their kindred at other law schools, if these are all following the same echo chamber, they're the future lawyers and judges and senators of the United States of America.
Yeah, and you can see what the Attorney General of New York, Alvin Bragg, is doing. And we're seeing a lot of attorney generals and federal prosecutors, but especially big city prosecutors that come out of this ideological stew. We see that's what critical race theory and critical legal theory are. That the idea is that there's no absolutes, that law is fluid, right, and your ideology predicates how you should be treated by the law when you break it.
Well, then, do we change the faculty? Do we change the students? Do we just turn our backs?
I think you have to cut them off of money. And as I think, if Stanford University was told tomorrow that they had a $700 million income tax bill on their tax-exempt revenue from their endowment, or that they were going to face cutoffs of up $1.5 billion in federal revenue, or the students couldn't use their student-backed loans until they honored the First Amendment, I think they would change in a nanosecond. But until then, it's not going to happen.
Victor Davis Hanson, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, a professor at Hillsdale College, recently commenting on the imbroglio at Stanford Law School that continues. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.